Dr. Zero, 2, Chapter 2, A Spy in the Dark. When Wade Hammond reached the broadside veranda of Munn's house, he saw three figures coming up the steps. Two of them were detectives. The man in the middle seemed to be their prisoner. They had him by the arms and were pushing him forcibly forward. One of the detectives, a man with a red, perspiring face, turned to Inspector Thompson and spoke. "We found this bird snooping around outside, Chief." He started to run and Bill had to pull a gun on him. "He's lucky he didn't get bumped off. He would have if I'd done the shooting." "Bring him in the house," said Thompson. "Who is he?"
"You've got me, Chief. But he looks like a bad actor."
The two plainclothes men shoved their prisoner into the lighted hallway. Wade stared at the man sharply. He was young, somewhere in his early 20s apparently, and he had the gangling look of a student with bookish tendencies. This was accentuated by the heavy shell-rimmed spectacles he wore. His face had a sullen expression as he stood blinking his eyes in the light.
"What's your name?" asked Thompson harshly. "What were you doing out there on the lawn?"
The young man continued to blink. Then he spoke in a surly monotone.
"I was just looking around. I'm Zodiac Smith."
"Looking around?" The inspector's voice was sarcastic. "What were you looking for? Did you lose a nickel or something?"
Smith's face reddened. He pressed his lips together and shook his head.
Thompson flared up.
"You won't talk, eh? You're one of those tight-lipped guys. Frisk him, Ed, and see if he's healed."
The red-faced detective began going through Zodiac Smith's pockets with professional thoroughness. He gave an excited exclamation as he drew something from the young man's coat where a conspicuous bulge had showed. It was an oblong leatherette case with two button fasteners. Thompson took it out of his hand and opened it while Wade stared over his shoulder. Inside the case were two round glass dials with a knurled screw head in the center. Needle-shaped indicators behind the glass of the dials were quivering. Wade spoke tensely.
"That's a galvanometer, I think. The other's a compass. They seem to be hitched together. It's a funny-looking gadget."
"What's a galvanometer?" asked Thompson peevishly.
"It shows when there's an electric current," said Wade. "What were you doing with this thing, Smith?"
Smith stared at Wade as sullenly as he had at the inspector.
"It's my business," he said. "I wasn't hurting anybody, was I?"
The cords in Inspector Thompson's neck swelled.
"No?"
he shouted. "Well, somebody heard Gordon Munn here tonight, killed him. You've got a lot of explaining to do, Smith. You'd better answer our questions."
Wade nodded.
"It'll save you trouble," he said. "Tell us what you know, Smith. You wouldn't be carrying that thing around if you weren't in on something. There's been a murder in this house, and murder can't be laughed off."
Smith's sullen face turned pale, but he maintained a stony silence.
Wade shrugged. "Have it your own way. You'll talk later if you don't now."
"You bet he will," said Thompson angrily. "Take him down to headquarters, Ed. We can find a way to unbutton his lip down there."
Thompson, Wade saw, was still smarting under the knowledge that the police department had fallen down in its attempt to protect Munn. The inspector handed the leatherette case to one of the detectives.
"Give this to Carmichael and Parks. They're going down with that balloon contraption. They can take Smith along with them. Go out and see if anybody else is snooping around here."
The two detectives turned their prisoner over to Parks and Carmichael, who were just coming down the stairs with the cardboard box containing the balloon. Wade spoke.
"I think I'll follow after them, Chief. There's not much I can do here, and I'm curious about that gadget of Smith's. He wasn't carrying it just for fun."
Wade left the house with the two headquarters men and their prisoner. He had no clear picture of the crime in his mind as yet. He'd taken an active part in many other strange homicide cases. But this murder gave indications of being the most sinister and fantastic he'd ever bumped into. His mind reverted to the sprawled in blackened form of Gordon Munn and to the weeping figure of Arlene as he had first seen her in the doorway of the room where her father had met death. What human fiend was behind this? Who is Dr. Zero, and what did Zodiac Smith know about the case that he was not willing to tell? Wade was still asking himself these questions as the police car containing Parks, Carmichael and their prisoner turned out of the driveway. He followed it in his own fast roadster. He wanted to be on hand when an expert in the Criminal Investigation Bureau examined the instrument that Smith carried. The taillight of the police car stared unwinkingly out of the darkness ahead like the eye of some monster. They passed other rich men's estates. Big houses set far back on well-kept lawns.
An indefinable pall of horror seemed to blend with the shadows of the night. The police car neared Parkway Boulevard with Wade's Roadster 100 feet behind. There were no other cars in sight. For a distance equaling 2 city blocks, an embankment rose on either side of the road and the pole lights were spaced far apart. Wade, occupied with his own thoughts, became aware suddenly of an unnatural glow on the distant horizon. Eerie reflections danced on the vibrating windshield of his Roadster. His eyes, registering that glow and those faint reflections, telegraphed a warning to his subconscious mind. A sensation that was like the touch of chill fingers ran up his spine. Then he cried out. The glow had deepened. It was concentrated in a pinpoint of light like a shooting star, a star that was coming nearer and which shed a lurid, uncanny radiance. Wade heard a sudden squeal of brakes ahead. Then a scream of human terror sounded, followed by the noise of breaking glass. The police car swerved toward the side of the road, and, in the glare of his own car's headlights, Wade saw a gangling, bespectacled form jump from the auto in front of him. He recognized it as Otis Smith. He saw Smith stumble and drop to his knees. Pinpoints of orange flame speared the darkness over his head as one of the detectives fired at the escaping prisoner. Then with an awkward leap, Smith vanished into the shadows of the shrub-clothed embankment. Behind him the night was made ghastly by another unearthly scream. The cause of Smith's terror was plain now. It wasn't his fear of the detective's bullets. It was that dancing, fantastic pinpoint of light which had now become a ball of purple fire headed straight toward the police car. Wade heard one of the detectives shout a warning. They, too, had become aware of the peril. He saw the police car slew around and leap forward under the powerful thrust of a suddenly speeded motor car. Michael and Parks were trying to escape their doom. Wade held his breath in horror. That lethal will-o'-the-wisp of light had changed its course now. Some hidden intelligence acting through unknown physical forces was guiding it. It curved down in a hawk-like swoop and followed the flying police car. For seconds that seemed to Wade like an eternity, the terrible purple death pursued the speeding vehicle. It gained foot by foot, hovered over the car for an instant, then dropped like a falling meteor. End of chapter.